Hello and welcome back to LSHTM Viral. My name is Amy Thomas. Today is World Mosquito Day 2020, and among other diseases, mosquitoes are vectors for malaria, which still kills 400,000 people annually. COVID-19 has increased strain on healthcare systems globally, highlighting inequalities and draining precious health resources. A recent report from the WHO says the continued disruption to malaria prevention could revert malaria deaths to levels seen two decades ago. But what can be done? First, we speak to Professor Sian Clark. Sian is the co-director of the Malaria Centre and Professor of Epidemiology and Global Health at LSHTM. Sian, not surprisingly, we have seen a focused shift towards COVID since the start of 2020. How is this affecting malaria generally?
I think one thing to think about is that the COVID pandemic hasn't started in all parts of the world at the same time. And it's only relatively recently that the disease spread to Africa, which is the continent most heavily affected by malaria. The countries in Africa that were first affected and have the highest COVID caseload at present, places like South Africa and Egypt, are countries where malaria is relatively uncommon. So to be honest, we don't yet know how much the advent of COVID will affect malaria in Africa. There have been some recent models published last week by staff from Imperial College and LSHTM. And those models indicate that the number of malaria deaths in 2020 could be more than double the number of deaths that were recorded in 2019. And to give you an estimate of what that might mean, the authors estimate that in Nigeria alone, disruptions to malaria control that lasted, for example, for about 6 months could result in 81,000 additional malaria deaths. And that's just for one country.
You mentioned disruption there. What does disruption look like in terms of malaria control?
We've got no particular reason to believe that one disease will directly influence transmission or severity of the other, although we can't rule that out because it's still early days, but it's probably unlikely. And the main way in which COVID-19 could affect malaria control is through the disruptions to the current measures that we use to control malaria. So, for example, malaria is one of the top four causes of childhood death, and malaria deaths can be prevented provided children receive rapid and effective treatment. But any delay to that treatment could result in death. So, for example, if the health systems are overwhelmed with dealing with COVID cases, or if the lockdown restrictions impede or delay patients from seeking treatment, that could be detrimental. Then the other thing, when we look around other parts of the world where the COVID epidemic has already struck, you can see that the pandemic disrupts local and global supply chains. So many of the malaria diagnostic tests and medicines are produced in countries like China and India, which is India is particularly badly affected at the current time. And so there may be limits to the medicines or diagnostic tests that are needed. On the other hand, that old adage, prevention is always better than cure, is particularly true for malaria. So sleeping under a long-lasting insecticidal net, we know, is the most effective current tool for reducing malaria. But the nets do get old and they get damaged and they need to be replaced from time to time. And several countries have planned for campaigns in 2020 for the mass distribution of new nets. And these typically require sort of large community gatherings in which nets are distributed, and clearly couldn't happen very easily under the current COVID situation. And then there are other important preventive measures, such as spraying the inside of houses with insecticide or distributing medicines for monthly preventive treatment during the peak malaria season in West Africa. And these both require teams to go house to house. So this prevention needs to happen, but in fact, it's critically important that it happens. But countries are needing to try and find alternative ways to distribute nets and preventive treatment, which take account of supply chain disruptions, of local lockdown, and also the need for social distancing.
So you mentioned children as a vulnerable group. Are there other groups that we should be concerned about, and which countries are most at risk?
The two groups that are most at risk are children under five in particular, who haven't yet developed immunity, but also pregnant women. And the countries which are most at risk are those that are closest to the equator, where malaria thrives, where the malaria mosquitoes thrive, but also countries that have large populations, and large populations of young children are those that are likely to be most effective. The other thing to bear in mind is that malaria disproportionately affects the poorest in society. So it's not necessarily thinking about which countries, sometimes it's thinking about which people within the country are most likely to be affected. The other thing is that, you know, malaria is a disease of poverty. And so when the numbers I talked about earlier in terms of the models of the impact, those models don't take account of the indirect impoverishing effect that COVID-19 might have on job security and household income, which might in turn increase the risk of malaria for some people.
So today is World Mosquito Day. Why is it particularly important to be concerned about mosquitoes in these poorer areas?
The issue in terms of poverty is that the poorest tend to live in areas which are poorly drained, unplanned housing. The houses are a poor structure. There's lots of holes the mosquitoes can enter in. And that's why it's really important to distribute bed nets to protect those people from being bitten in the first place, and why you have these mass campaigns with universal distribution of bed nets to all members of society. The other aspect to consider is that the poorest are often those that can least afford to take time off to seek treatment should their children fall sick, or may not have the means to pay for transport or to seek treatment. It can also contribute to delay in seeking treatment as people try to raise the funds that they might need.
The main interventions that are used to control mosquitoes, especially malaria vectors, indoor residual spraying, which involves the application of an insecticide inside on the walls or the inner walls of the house, and insecticide-treated nets, which are simply nets that are treated with a long-lasting formulation of an insecticide that could go up to 3 to 5 years.
This is Dr. Corinne Gaffour, an assistant professor of medical entomology at LSHTM, with over 10 years of field experience in mosquito biology and vector control. Her research is focused on the use of insecticide combinations to improve the control and management of insecticide-resistant African mosquito vectors of malaria. She's currently based in Benin, where she coordinates the implementation of a portfolio of research projects investigating new control tools for targeting insecticide-resistant malaria vectors.
So these interventions, very effective and scalable, and they have contributed to reducing the malaria burden that has been observed in many endemic countries over the last two decades. There are other interventions such as larviciding, repellents, house modifications, but these are usually recommended only under specific situations as they are less scalable compared to insecticide-treated nets and IRS. The effectiveness of IRS and ITINs is, however, threatened by widespread resistance to the insecticides that can be used in these interventions. Our research in Benin is to identify new types of nets and new types of insecticides that can be used to effectively control these insecticide-resistant populations. So we have a control program or a research program which is based at the Ministry of Health in Benin, and we work in collaboration with major chemical companies, the WHO, and the Innovative Vector Control Consortium in Liverpool to identify these new insecticide-based interventions.
And how have these projects been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic?
For the post-evaluation, we have to follow up a cohort of children to investigate how the nets distributed is affecting the prevalence of malaria and incidence in these children, and also to look at vector densities in homes, in selected homes within our study area. But these activities do require some contact with people in the community. So we have had to modify our protocols to ensure social distancing. We have had to use more of a no-touch, door-to-door approach to meet with children that are in our cohort studies, and also to go into homes to change the way we collect mosquitoes from people's houses, making sure that we maintain at least 1 meter social distance from each other.
Are there any other challenges that you've faced from COVID-19 that have influenced the actual distribution of the nets?
We were lucky because we distributed before the pandemic came into Benin. But then the National Malaria Control Program had to distribute the nets widely within the country only after the pandemic was announced in Benin. And they had to change a lot of things. The main challenge has been, okay, how do you ensure social distance when you have to gather people into central distribution points? So they also had to adopt a door-to-door approach to be able to give nets to people and increase the use of PPE by the field workers and those involved in the distribution campaigns.
So what impact has that actually had on the wider goals of the campaign? Are there any trade-offs that we might experience from the new approach taken during COVID-19?
There will certainly be trade-offs. I mean, there would be some difficulties. We may not be able to collect data at the same level as we used to do before. But I think that with the situation that we have at hand, this is something that we can deal with. I think what is most essential at the moment is to ensure that people at least have nets that they can use to protect themselves against malaria during this period of the pandemic.
So how can we ensure that vector control campaigns like this continue, whilst also ensuring that health workers and communities are protected against potential COVID transmission?
Due to the burden of vector-borne diseases, it is important that vector control campaigns are not abandoned, even in the era of COVID-19. But on the other hand, we know COVID-19 is a serious disease. I mean, there is still no vaccine and there are no effective drugs identified yet. So it is equally important to ensure that the vector control programs are modified to reduce the risk of transmission and to protect the health workers. With effective social distancing, it should be possible to continue essential net distribution campaigns and high-risk campaigns. So the first step would be to understand how the response to COVID-19 at a country level or at a national level will affect their existing vector control campaigns, and to carefully map out strategies that they can work around to be able to mitigate some of the challenges that they could face and balance out things to ensure that the campaigns are successful. First, it's also important to ensure that all health workers involved in such vector control campaigns are fully trained on COVID transmission and how to protect themselves from COVID-19. And a no-touch approach would be essential, ensuring that people do not contact one another and that there is at least some distance, that's the 1 meter distance between health workers. In some areas, like in Benin, they have used a door-to-door campaign for distributing nets. And also, we need to make sure that health workers have essential personal protective equipment available to them at all times. And this includes things like masks, like gloves, that if they have to touch nets, and also handing nets to people. And we have to make sure that their health is being assessed from time to time during the campaigns, that if any individuals are found to have symptoms of COVID-19, they are actually withdrawn and treated and replaced as needed.
Sean, although we don't know how things will pan out exactly because COVID-19 cases remain low in some of these countries, Are you worried about the prospects for malaria in the coming months?
Absolutely. Malaria is recognised as a major cause of childhood death. In the last 15, 20 years or so, we've seen tremendous progress, which is on the back of things like the distribution of bed nets, the distribution of seasonal malaria keen prevention in West Africa, you know, prevents a huge number of deaths. And if any of those are disrupted, even partially, so for example, the model I mentioned earlier, those figures are based on, you know, even if there's a, say, 50% disruption to malaria prevention. So it's not assuming that nothing happens, but it's assuming that there's some disruption, then those are the kinds of estimates that they could predict. So that's not really a worst case scenario, it's a sort of relatively middle case scenario, as it were.
As we've discussed, COVID is affecting other health conditions like malaria all over the world and in different ways. Why do we need to consider this collateral damage?
In the current time, I suppose the immediate thought will go to COVID, the disease, the threats that the disease presents, the excess deaths which are occurring because of those threats. But we shouldn't neglect thinking about what indirect effects this disease might have on the health system more generally. I think, you know, much as we've seen in the press in the UK, where people are talking about treatment of cancer, for example, delays in operations in low-income countries and malaria-endemic countries in particular, then those are kind of collateral damage, as you say, that is resulting on these other diseases because the health system is overwhelmed or the people are reluctant or perhaps scared to seek treatment from the health system, will have this kind of wider knock-on effect. Absolutely.
A huge thank you to Corinne and to Sean for chatting to us on the podcast. Some really important themes to take away. If you're interested in finding out more about malaria and the great work that they are doing at the centre, then please visit the website link in the description box of this podcast. Thank you again for listening to LSHTM Viral, and have a great day.